Attorney General Liz Merle's office has been busy of late, so I felt it was time for a check-in. Good morning, Ms. Merle. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Brian?
I'm doing very well as well. I want to talk mostly about the Ten Commandments case, but I had Franz Borkhardt on earlier for Legally Served, and we were talking about the Bob Dean case as well, nursing home owner Bob Dean. If you could, just very quickly, I don't want to go into too much detail on it, but your reaction to that was one of, should I say, disappointment?
Yeah, I was disappointed that he wasn't required to serve jail time. I think he should have been. And, you know, the judge clearly thought otherwise. But, you know, I thought the circumstances justified having him spend a little bit of time with the government.
Yeah, I mean, it just 15 people died. I don't know how to reconcile that, you know?
I know it's hard, and it's hard for everybody, and especially the families of the victims. And, you know, I mean, I think the criminal negligence that he demonstrated toward the people that were in his care, people who were dependent on him, and to be moved safely and cared for when they were moved. You know, it's unfortunate, and it's disappointing that he isn't being held more accountable.
No, 100%. All right, we got Attorney General Liz Merle with us. I wanted to talk Ten Commandments law, passed in the legislative session, signed off on by the governor, and now is in the courts. But it's going to be a minute before this is actually discussed. I didn't want to get too far down the road without making sure we're clear on what's going on. And, like, you know, this hasn't been blocked. It hasn't been held up. This is just the order of events?
Yeah, no, you know, it takes some time to implement a law like this, and we really don't want to see a bunch of school boards being sued, and so we are being careful about giving them some advice about how to implement the law. And I believe the law can be applied constitutionally, and so, you know, we had a discussion with the judge about briefing schedules, and wanted to make sure that we had time to brief everything, and we believe there is time to brief the issues that are pending right now in the court and also implement the law before the deadline.
So the deadline is in January of next year, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
The hold off, the pause for beginning the implementation would be mid-November. Is this still an accurate timeline? I mean, are we expecting this to possibly get kicked up to a higher court or challenged along the way?
Well, I really don't think anything will happen until the judge rules. But remember, the only school boards that are affected by the discussion occurring in the courthouse right now are the ones that were sued. So every other school board can do anything they want, and they can do it whenever they want. The law has a deadline for compliance of January 1st, but it doesn't mean they couldn't do it before that. We plan to file a brief in court and explain how we think the law can be applied constitutionally and illustrate that. And so, you know, school boards are going to have some options that they can apply that are, shall we say, approved by the Attorney General.
Okay, so approved by the Attorney General kind of leads me up to my next question there. If this is individual school boards being sued, how does it kick all the way up to your office?
Well, because my job is to defend the constitutionality of the statute, and that's been challenged. So, you know, we can step in and defend the law anytime that it's challenged. And in this case, in every case, when a law is challenged, when a constitutionality of a law is challenged, the challenger has to sue somebody who has the power to enforce it. And in this case, school boards are the ones that actually post the poster. And so that's why some of them have been sued.
So I hope I'm not oversimplifying, but you're defending the law without being the defendant?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. We got Attorney General.
Now, if I want to, I can intervene in the case on behalf of the state of Louisiana, and I can defend it that way, or I can just represent the defendants who have been sued. And in this case, that's what we're doing. Bessie was also sued. Department of Education was sued. Our office is representing them. Mm-hmm. And if I believe that it's appropriate, then I can file an intervention and join the lawsuit basically voluntarily so that I can defend the law.
Well, would your intervention circumvent any future lawsuits?
Not really. I mean, you know, people can still go file a lawsuit in another district if they wish. Mm-hmm. The likelihood is that it'll all be transferred and consolidated with the one that's pending. Right. I don't think that the pending lawsuit has actually been filed at the appropriate time. Nobody has done anything yet. So there's no poster that I'm aware of that's been put up on any wall. And so there really is nothing to sue over until someone has actually posted a poster. And so we've raised that issue with the court. And those are kind of, you know, legal maneuvering. There will eventually be posters.
Right.
And they will eventually go up on the wall. So, you know, at some point there is going to be the timing will be proper for somebody to file a lawsuit. I just don't think that the law violates the Constitution. It can be constitutionally applied. It's going to depend a lot on the context statement and the way that it's built.
Walk me down that path. I hesitate to ask a head coach to get a look at their playbook before taking on an opponent, but walk me down that path if you could. How can it be custom?
So when this first kind of blew up, I talked a lot on the radio about the fact that the east side of the United States Supreme Court building, right at the apex of the east side of that building at the top in the frieze, is Moses carved into the building, holding the tablets that contain the Ten Commandments. And the reason that that's there is because Moses illustrates one of the great lawmakers of history. And so this discussion has occurred in the United States Supreme Court and some of the cases involving the Ten Commandments and about how you can present that material if you put it in a historical context. And so if we want to fit it within existing Supreme Court precedent, then we need to present it in a manner that demonstrates its historical context and how it fits into kind of the foundations of our founding documents.
I'm wondering why this approach hasn't been used before, because when you say it that way, it's like slap on the forehead type of revelation, right? But it just, we've seen instances in the past where there's tried to be some level of implementation of something from the Bible put into a classroom, and it's always been shot down because it's from the Bible. This is a different approach.
Well, there is a case where the court approved of it being presented in an historical context, and so that's really the precedent that we are trying to follow.
We've got Attorney General Liz Murrell with us talking about the Ten Commandments case. Now, following along with the let's say we're able to stay on the right timeline here without appeals or kicking this up to a different court. Saying we're able to stay on the same timeline, getting from November to January is going to happen pretty quickly. Is there going to be any kind of leeway given on deadlines here because of this delay?
I mean, the law itself doesn't have any particular consequences outlined in it. I think Bessie potentially has, you know, inherent authority to act when a school is non-compliant with the law. Mm-hmm. But I think that the school boards generally want to comply with the law, and they will be looking for some assistance in making sure that they're capable of doing that and doing it by the deadline. So my objective is to try to, you know, make sure that everything tracks along on a good path so that they will have something they can post in January.
We've got Attorney General Liz Murrell with us. I got a couple more minutes left. If can we go back to something from previous in the month, which is completely pivoting topics here. But earlier in July, I saw a press release from your office about an attempt to designate a police station in New Orleans mm-hmm. as a vocational technical school. Can we revisit that real quick? Because we did not cover that on the show, and I thought it was an important note.
Yeah, look, I think, you know, there's a lot of violence in New Orleans, and we've all, you know, been doing a lot to try and curb it and get New Orleans back under control. And so I'm prosecuting cases there. I'm doing my part in that effort. And I understand that they have a concern about gun violence, but this was not the right way to try and address it. A group of people in New Orleans got together that included the DA and some city council members and the chief of police, and was some advice, I think, from Morris Bart, which is a little bit baffling. But in any event, they decided that they could create a gun-free school zone if they designated it as a VOTEC school. And they do some educational training there for deputies. And it's a pretty expansive list of classes. I've seen it. But I did explain to them that you can't just designate a professional training location, a VOTEC school, and turn it into a gun-free school zone. That's not how the law works. And if the law was that broad, then the whole law would probably be unconstitutionally overbroad. It would violate people's Second Amendment rights if it was that broad. Every law firm in downtown New Orleans and probably in downtown Baton Rouge does some kind of professional training in their offices. I just told them that the law defines what a VOTEC school is, and a VOTEC school is a school that's part of the LCTCS system.
She is Attorney General Liz Murrell. We always appreciate the time and the information. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Always, Attorney General Liz Murrell.